And happy Monday, and welcome to Angel Answers with yours truly, Amy Toy. I have a phenomenal guest on tonight who is going to kind of, I think, shatter the myth of the ego. Ayla Achad is a award-winning international speaker, best-selling author, and certified life coach who began her quest for the purpose of her life at the age of 9. That must be pivotal to a lot of us because that sounds familiar. She became an energy healer, Reiki master, and stress expert in the process of exploring numerous wisdom paths. As president and founder of LifeQuest International, LLC, she shares uniquely simple experiences to help clients hear and live their call of the soul. Thousands have achieved self-knowledge and stress freedom through her groundbreaking process, Breaking the Perfection Myth, and her best-selling book, 34 Instant Stress Busters. As stress expert and healthcare futurist, she is a popular keynote speaker and radio and television guest. And Ayla lives in Charleston, West Virginia, and today she's talking about her book, The Call of the Soul, A Path to Knowing Your True Self and Your Life's Purpose. Welcome, sweetie. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, you have a phenomenal book. What led you to write The Call of the Soul? I mean, that's like a profound title.
Well, thanks. Actually, the original title that I had kind of in the back of my mind for several years and thought I was not going to even be ready to write this book for a few more years was The Ego and the Soul, A Love Story, which turns out to be, you'll see one of the chapters in the book. But when I was just describing it to a person at a conference, she said, well, there's a book agent here. Why don't you just, let me just introduce you to her. And so she did, and I told her, she said, well, tell me just two sentences about that book. And I told her that at the beginning of our life, you know, the ego protects the soul, and then at some point, the soul wants out, and the ego has to shift and support the soul's journey. She said, I want that book. Write me a proposal. And the rest is history. That happened last year, and I wrote a proposal. I didn't even know how to write a proposal. I had to Google it, and I Googled how to write a proposal and learned how to do that, wrote her a proposal in about 2.5 months, and then she sold the book in a week, and they wanted it by February 1st, and that's the way it happened.
Wow, can you talk about...
And then the publisher changed the... We brainstormed some titles, and that's how we came up with this one.
Wow, you know, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, what's all this book? Like I said, I love my job. I get to learn so many different things. But why do you feel it's so difficult for our soul to, respond to its calling? Why do you think
Right. There's a couple of reasons. One is, you know, early, our soul is just pure naive at the beginning of our life. You know, we're babies, and we are just absorbing all kinds of information, and we're curious, and we're just looking at everything in nature. And what happens is we're brought up and acculturated. We're taught how we should be and what our natural inclinations are not enough. You know, we have to, you know, to sit still, be quiet. Children should be seen and not heard. Right. Don't do that. Don't do the other. And so we start to get disciplined and we learn we're not what our instincts and our intuitions are not right. And so we have to control those, right? And that's how the ego forms. The ego forms out of the experience we have with just being ourselves and being true to our nature and following our natural inclination as a soul. So when you get to the point where, like adolescence, and somebody says, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? We don't have a clue how to break out of that. We might have an instinct about what we'd love to do, but then for the most part, we get that tamped down again. It's like, well, that's not realistic. You can't earn a living doing that. You ought to get married and have kids and do this. So we start to conform to, again, the cultural beliefs that we've been brought up in. And then at midlife, the soul is pushing against that structure, that ego structure. It wants out. It wants to follow its joy. It's, you know, life is supposed to be happy and joyful, and we have a nature that wants out. And at that point, we have another window of opportunity, and we can tamp it back down, or we can learn how to let it go. And what has to happen is that original ego, what we call the ego, that original conditioning has to learn a new way to support the soul's journey from that point on, rather than trying to protect it. And what we develop is this protective mechanism, you know, so to protect ourselves from getting punished or getting abandoned or whatever it might be, we've created a little shell called the ego. And that shell, I shouldn't say little, it's pretty thick and you know, ruling. It kind of rules us. And so we've created that to protect us. Mm-hmm. When you get to be an adult, you don't need protection anymore, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You can begin to learn to how to recondition that ego so you can do more of the things you really love to do and really want to do.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense, because in the spiritual world, or, you know, the metaphysical world, the ego has this bad rap.
Right.
You know, it's, what do they do that you either would suppress it, deny it? I mean, whatever you need to do. But
right.
How can we use the
meditate
ego?
And rise above it.
Yeah, meditate, yeah. Go into the forest and meditate through amongst the trees, whatever you want to do here.
Right.
How do we work with the ego, really? How do we kind of work with it instead of work against it?
Yeah, so the first thing I learned through my process, which was quite grueling, I went through 12 years of therapy, and I went through 12 years of another program called the Diamond Heart Approach, and I did a lot of things, other things to try to learn this. And what I came up with was the fact that the ego literally loves the soul. It is a love story. The soul, the ego forms from the soul, so it's part of us. It's not separate from us. So to hate it or to suppress it or to deny it or rise above it is to not be really kind and compassionate to ourselves. So what I learned is to embrace that, the desire of the ego to protect me, and begin to work with changing it. You know, the ego is just a condition. It's a conditioned response. It's based on our experience. So what you need to do is have a new experience, and every time you have a new experience, the problem is breaking out of those old patterns isn't easy. So if you can find a way to do that, which I found several techniques, and one being the emotional freedom tapping technique, the acupressure technique, works beautifully for beginning to let that old guard down and then take a new step in a new direction. Every time you do something new, the mind catalogs it. So it goes, well, hey, that worked. We can do that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first few steps you take outside of your old conditioning, it's hard. It's it's a little scary. It's a lot scary sometimes, because your mind is telling you, uh-oh, you know, remember what happened when you were two and you tried to do something like that and you crossed the street without asking, you know. Mm-hmm. So all of that old stuff is just a program. It's like a little librarian running around in your head going, uh-oh, I remember when that happened before, and this happened, and people won't like me if I do that. So you almost have to work against the grain the first few steps, but then when it works out, your mind goes, oh, okay. It just catalogs that. It doesn't really have a preference for one way or another. It just happened to be those were the experiences you first had. And so we all had something. And then as we grow up, the more you can step out of that old pattern, and most of us need support to do that. We don't just go renegade on ourselves. We just, you know, the ego is pretty strong. So we have to have a little bit of support to step out, do something new, and then your mind catalogs that. And after a few steps, you know, the image I have of this is Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, if you remember. It's a perfect metaphor because he's going for the Holy Grail, and that is our soul. Our soul is our Holy Grail. It is what, you know, is going to take us to our the fruition of what we came for. And so this Holy Grail's in the other cave, and he's on the one side, and between the two is an abyss, and there's no way to get to that cave, or at least appears there isn't. And he's got all these guys coming to kill him. So it's life or death, and that's a lot of times when this happens. When we have a near-death experience or a life and death situation, we have to do something different. And so you step off that cliff. And when he stepped off the cliff, when Indiana Jones stepped off the cliff, here comes the ground to meet his foot. And that's how it feels. That's exactly how it works. You're stepping out into the unknown, but there's ground under your feet. Because if you're stepping toward your purpose, your destiny, what you're here for, the universe is going to support you. And then he takes another step, and there's ground. And by the third and fourth step, he's ready to just run right over to the other cave. And that's how it feels. The first few steps are hard because you really don't know that there's ground under your feet. But once you feel it, then you go, oh, okay, that worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you can do it again.
Yep. Exactly. You know, in any time in our lives, you know, the ego, we're met with resistance. And how can we... You know, you talk about...
I think but the first step, Amy, is to know that resistance is not meant to hurt you. It's
right.
It's meant to protect you. And now you're a grown-up, and you don't need protection anymore.
Right, exactly. So that's the first awareness we need.
That's the first awareness that helped me. And I got that from a psychic. I went to a friend of mine who did readings. And I wasn't even thinking about asking her this, but I was having night terrors. Where I would go to sleep and wake up, you know, suddenly after about 10, 15 minutes, screaming, thinking something was killing me. And then I would be able to go back to sleep. Well, it was unpredictable. I was at other people's houses. I was in hotels when this happened. And I would be screaming and scared of my husband to death. And
wow.
So I had this reading. And at the end, I said, you know, Sandy, do you happen to know anything about these night terrors? Now, I had asked three psychologists, a psychiatrist, and a couple other people I knew. Nobody had a clue about what to do about it. She says, oh, yeah, that's because you are growing spiritually so much at this point that your ego is afraid it's going to die.
Uh-huh.
And see, we need the ego in the body. We need it is part of our survival mechanism. Right? So
okay.
That's why the ego gets afraid, because it thinks you're going to die. So she said what to do is sit on the edge of the bed before you go to sleep and talk to your ego. So I started having a dialogue with my ego. I said, you know, I appreciate that you're trying to protect me. I know that you, and I need you. I'm not getting rid of you, okay? But I need you to be different. I need you to support me now on this growth path, rather than trying to stop it. And I never had another night terror after that. And that's what convinced me that that what she was saying was true, that the ego was trying to protect me, and it thought it was going to lose, and if it lost, I would die.
Wow, that is another wow.
Yeah, that was a turning point for me. That was a huge turning point.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, you know, people come to me for readings and it's like, this is what's going on. It's very simple. I think we overcomplicate everything, but the ego, you know, like I said, it's been made out to be the villain, and it's really not. And when I read your book and I read that, I was like, oh, thank God. I didn't think God would create something within me that wasn't usable in some force, you know, capacity here, you know, and that's what I thought. I'm like, why suppress it? It's amazing. So,
well, and I think in some, maybe way back in other cultures, we weren't indoctrinated in the way we are now, which is so, you know, we have all these beliefs that say there's something within us that's bad. You know, you have an original flaw and you can never get rid of it. And I don't think that's true at all. I think it is simply that, you know, we've been conditioned to believe these things. and then we don't want to go inside and discover anything because we're afraid that whatever we're going to find is going to be terrible. And and that's this fear that we grow up with, the fear of doing something that is, you know, natural to you, and you'll screw everything up. Well, the truth is, I think in other cultures, they've had a moment where you get indoctrinated into being an adult. Okay, you cross over the line into adulthood where you're now given the freedom to make new choices. We don't actually, I think we've lost, I think, you know, some of the early Joseph Campbell and people like that have talked about, we don't have a threshold we walk across anymore. We don't have an initiation into adulthood that really puts a wall and says, now you're free to make new choices. Now you need to, you know, we don't teach people how to come back home to that soul that is the template for where you're supposed to be in your life. I think of the soul as sort of like the seed. You know, if I spent a year sitting in my yard watching nature because I was, like, depressed and I didn't have any clue what to do next. And I sat out there. I was almost getting claustrophobic. I was claustrophobic. It was like 20 minutes indoors was enough. I sat outside and I watched nature. And what I've come to is we aren't part of nature, right? So we operate the same way everything else in nature operates. You know, give us the seed that we come from is just like the acorn, okay? The acorn holds the template or the blueprint for the oak tree. The oak tree naturally becomes an oak tree. It doesn't have to do anything to become an oak tree. We didn't have to do anything to go from a baby to an adult. We just had to stay alive. Okay, right. You stay alive, you become Amy Toy. You become the adult. Okay. And we need the same things that nature needs, so that tree needs. We need water, we need air, we need sun, nutrients. I mean, we need the same thing nature needs. So if we're given those elements, we naturally become who we were intended to be. And that blueprint is inside of us. Well, I think of it as the soul knowing that blueprint. It knows the future. It knows the next step. The mind does not. The mind only catalogs the past. So we can't do anything but repeat our old patterns. But if you start to connect again, and this is the other thing we've learned to do, is disconnect from our intuition, not to respect it and value it. You know, it's like the mind is the master, and everything is all geared to intellectual, you know, pursuit, understanding things, knowing stuff. From an intellectual perspective. But the truth is, it is this inner center, the heart and the soul. This is what has the information for us about what's next. And so when you step into that, you can't go wrong. You know, it's going to lead you in the right direction. But we're not taught that. We're just not, you know, we're taught the opposite.
We're taught, and then if you do have an intuitive thought or pattern or, you know, inkling, and you follow it, and you don't understand why you need to follow it, but usually it leads you to where you need to be. And, you know, and I think, too, with myself, I had to learn to trust my intuition by just trusting it and letting things be, not overthinking things.
Right.
And I tell my clients that, too. It's like, kind of follow your intuition. Don't question it. Don't think about it. Just do it.
Right. And I say that to a lot of people now. I say, you know that little Nike check mark? Just do it.
Just do it.
One of those over your computer. Just do it.
And sometimes we don't know why we're being led in a different direction or, you know, and I think, I believe, and you say, which is interesting about, you say the soul is moment by moment unfoldment. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's just like a flower. You know, it unfolds by the moment. And so it knows the next step. It doesn't have a plan that you can follow. You know, it's not setting out a goal for you to go toward. It's just the next step. So you're taking it one step at a time, and you're noticing, okay, how does it feel? This is very much a sensory experience. So how does this feel to me? Does this feel like it's more energy? When you're operating under your on your soul's journey,
mm-hmm.
you have lots of energy, of enthusiasm. You get excited,
mm-hmm.
and that's your clue that that's what you're doing. You're following your soul's path. I don't know why, but I just really feel like I ought to go there today,
mm-hmm.
right? And I feel good about it. That's what happened to me. I went to this conference with my friend. I really wasn't sure I wanted to go to the conference, but something kept pulling at me and saying, you know, you're not doing anything else this weekend. You might as well go to the conference. And that part of that voice, that kind of felt voice, kept saying, well, you might as well go. And I finally thought, yeah, I might as well go. And I went, and here's an agent, and there's a book. I mean, how many people can do it that easily? You usually hear that this is a real struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And any time I've tried to set a goal ahead of myself, it hasn't worked out. So mm-hmm. I know this is true when I've gone with the pull, the attraction, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what are you attracted to?
Mm-hmm.
That will give you the clue.
Hmm. Interesting.
And yeah, it's moment by moment. It's step by step. You don't know really where it's going to end up.
No, you don't. And sometimes, you know, I was being pulled in a different direction a few months ago, and I'm glad I did because it opened up other avenues for me. And I'm like, why am I going? I don't want to go here. And I did, and now I'm glad I did. It's just so many different things I can relate to with that, because I feel like the more you start trusting your intuition and your soul's journey. Because people will call me up and they'll say, what's the purpose of my life? I'm like, well, what do you like to do? What are you pulled towards? You have the answers within yourself.
That's right.
We all have the answers within ourselves. And that's why some people, I think, you know, it's like, don't overthink. Just go within. What do you like to do? Whether it's gardening. And you talk about in your book different experiences, only not yourself, but you bring in some clients. You want to talk about Michael for a little bit?
Oh, yes. In fact, he just came back last week from China, and we did a couple of presentations, and it was delightful. People just had tears in their eyes because they felt there was hope. Michael was one of my clients, and that's not his real name. When he came to me, he was referred to me. He had been through the death of his father. He had lost a lot of his self-esteem and his motivation. He had been run over by a truck and had lots of surgeries. So he was still in physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually, the first thing he asked me for was Reiki. And so we did a whole Reiki session, and I've done Reiki for him several times. And then we did some coaching, and we did the tapping to release some of the pain and the old experiences that were still holding him back. And then after about 8 months of coaching, he said, I usually have a ritual where we sit quietly for a minute, center, and then I asked him to go into his heart and ask his heart, what does his heart desire for this session? He said, I want to know my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I said, okay, stay in that meditative space. I want you to visualize. If you could do anything you wanted, money and time were no object, you had all the support to do it, what would you be doing? He would be in an indigenous culture, learning the symbols and meaningful icons from that culture, and he would be incorporating them into his artwork, and he had this whole picture of what he would be doing, and I felt it. You know, I could just feel the excitement, and his eyes were lighting up, and he was getting excited. I said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where we're headed here.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I said, what's the first step you need to take? What do you need to do first? Well, he thought he needed some money, he needed a grant, or he needed to get some education
mm-hmm.
on how to do that. So he was going to go back to school. So I said, well, where would you like to go? And he named two big universities. And I said, okay, let's get the applications and fill them out. And as soon as I said that, here comes the ego saying, well, nobody will pay for it. I don't have the money, da, 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 right? And I said, let's not worry about it, how it's going to happen. Just fill out the applications. Let's do that. We filled out the applications, sure enough. And he called someone. He had seen a book by an artist who he just admired, and he called her, and she was at one of these universities. And she picked up, or her assistant picked up the phone and put her on the phone. It was like he was shocked that he could even get a hold of her. But this is what the universe does. Once you have the vision and you're stepping into it, the universe meets you and brings you the resource. So this woman gets on the phone. She said, well, you know what? He said he wanted to study with her. And she said, we can develop a program for you. And they actually did. He went to that university. Within about 6 months or so, he was showing his art in California and New York. He had an unusual experience in the New York gallery where it was a little controversial because he had some nude models. And so he got written up in the New York Times. I mean, he just became more and more famous from just following his path. Every time he took a step, here came a new opportunity. And then he got invited to go to China to study in China and to do his art. He had his he didn't speak Chinese. He didn't know anyone in China. As this was a university there, had called him to do this. And he's been there for the last almost a year. Every 3 months, he has to come back for a week because of a visa, and then he goes back. And so he's back there now. And his first opening, he had 1,800 people.
Wow.
At his first opening. And he knew nobody when he started. It was just amazing. So this is what happens. You follow, it seems impossible. You know, the mind doesn't know because it's never been there. The past is not going to be repeated here, right? So there, and he's doing great, and he's using the tools on a daily basis to just help his ego to reform, so that it's supporting him now. So eating properly, you know, these are the things the ego likes. The ego likes stuff that keeps you in survival, right? So
right.
Eating properly, exercising, you know, the things that we're told we should do. Well.
Uh-huh.
You love to do them when you realize that when you do that, the ego gets off your back.
Interesting. Yeah,
you know, having some kind of a structure, and attending to what the ego needs.
Yeah, self-care.
basically
self-care, yeah. And a little bit about the enforcer and the observer. What are they?
Well, the enforcer is like, so the ego is the rules. The enforcer is like the police officer that's, you know, giving you a ticket. It's the enforcer is the internal, we call it the inner critic. Okay, the ego actually isn't very critical. It's just the rules. But the critic is telling you, you know, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You're so stupid. You're da-da-da-da, right? It's the little chatter that goes on all the time trying to keep you in line. Or it pats you on the head saying, oh, what a good girl, you just, you know, that was good of you to do that. And so it's keeping you in line.
Mm-hmm.
That, when you become an adult, you do not need that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we begin to work with releasing that. And here again, the tapping can help. On mine, you know, when I hear sometimes I still observe that, I go, oh, yeah, thank you for sharing. I appreciate that, you know, but I'm already past that. And then the observer, we as human beings can observe ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can actually notice where your feet are right now or where your hand is, how you're sitting, right? There's a part of you that can reflect back and look at that. It can observe what you're thinking. It can observe that when you're in certain situations, this happens or that happens. It doesn't have any preference one way or the other. It's like a researcher just going, oh, that's interesting how that works and how, oh, I notice now every time the phone rings and so-and-so calls, I get a little knot in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can observe that. So the observer is your friend. The observer is what helps you to really notice the patterns without judging them. So it's not good or bad. The judgment can go. We don't need the judgment anymore. We're human beings. We're all human. We're all part of the same species. We all have the same kinds of things to deal with. And so observing that and saying, oh, now that I understand, that's the pattern. What can I do different this time and see how that works? It's almost like a little experimental, you know, doing little experiments with yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes you're like, why did I do that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, because why we did it is because something happened when we were two or three.
Exactly.
And that, so it doesn't make a lot of logical sense at 23, you know, or 43.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it because we're still stuck in the emotion of that three-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Why do you feel, you used a lot of your own experiences as well. Why did you feel the need to do that for your, you know, why did you feel the need to bring your experiences in?
Well, because I think that's how I learn is from experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So rather than make this a conceptual book, because I think there's plenty of those out there, of books that have a framework that says, this is why that happens. You know, you made a contract before you came into the world. And so there are all kinds of frameworks, and they may be true, but they're not my experience, right? So this came through my experience. I had lots of theory. I have a library to die for downstairs, and most of those books are signed by the authors. You know, I've been through a lot of concepts. And so I understood all the concepts. So which one do you pick? You know, Freud, do you pick Jung, do you pick, you know, Carolyn Meese or whatever? So I thought, you know, really, this is my experience, and I can tell you what it feels like. And it's grounded in experience. And I think that's why when people read the book, they go, oh, I resonate with I understand this, right? Because it's not an idea. It's not a concept. It's an experience.
Yeah, which I felt it was more relatable to me, you know, pertaining to me, because sometimes that's how, when I write, that's what I do. I'll use my experience and, you know, hey, this is what I did, you know. I thought it was interesting. Now, when we are, I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
That's okay.
When we're going through, in your chapter of transformation, what brings that transformation on, do you think?
Well, usually a crisis of some kind. We might be able to do it without a crisis, but I haven't seen that yet. But as people know this stuff, maybe we can do it with more of a, as I said before, an initiation, right, instead of having to be a crisis. But it's usually a crisis of some kind. You lost your job, divorce, you know, somebody's just decided they don't want to be married anymore, accident, physical disability, you know, you get a disease. I know cancer is a wake-up call for a lot of people, right? And then suddenly you go, wow, you know, what if I don't have that much time left? Now we think about, oh, what's really important, right? What's really important? Midlife is that way for a lot of people. It's like you get to 50 and you go, wait a minute, I might not have that much time left. What's really important to me?
Right.
And that's when we make the change a lot of times. We look for a way to shift.
Right, and it's almost like you go through, you call it a disorientation. Like, you don't know if you're coming or going. I mean, when I had my near-death experience, that's what happened to me. I didn't know if I was coming or going. But I knew I couldn't go back to the old way.
You can't go back, that's right. And so you don't know what's in front of you, right? And that is disorienting. It's like, well, so who am I now? Who am I now? And and it really is at the point where I went through my big shift. I had gone through all these changes, and then my kids, you know, got married, and so they weren't my kids. I wasn't a mom in that role of mother anymore, and I was divorced. I wasn't in the role of wife anymore, and everything had changed. And I thought, well, who am I now? I literally changed my name because it was like it's a new life.
Yeah, and it's amazing that I feel it's like your soul is trying to heed that call in some way. It's like dying to get out, like you said.
Yes. And what do you fall back on? You fall back on your truth. What is your truth? Now here's the catch. we have been looking to other people as a guide for how we should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at your fingertip, you'll notice that there's a pattern on there that indicates you are one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot model your life after someone else. I don't care who it is. There might be people who are inspiring to you,
right?
Or who have done something and you say, "Ooh, that looks really cool. I'd love to do something like that." But it's going to be different. It has to be your unique because you're unique. And
right.
So we grow up in a culture that says you all ought to be pretty much the same, and the one that looks a little different, we're going to, you know, bully them, pick on them, you know, whatever.
Right.
From this point on, you have to become comfortable with being just who you are. And that's hard because mm-hmm. you will be counterculture. You
mm-hmm.
live in a separate world. Now, there are other people who are being themselves, and that becomes your new collective, your new group, the people who are perfectly fine with you being just the way you are,
mm-hmm.
and they're just the way they are. We have a lot more acceptance, less judgment. You know, you're not judging yourself, and when you stop judging yourself, well, you're not judging other people very much either.
Uh-huh,
right?
Yes.
Most mm-hmm. of what we point to other things, you heard that saying, right? You point the finger at someone and three are pointing back at you. that's because that's what we're doing to ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And so when you move into this new paradigm, this new way of living in the world, where you're less judgmental of yourself, more compassionate and loving of yourself, well, it's easy to love other people who are also in that place. And it's just life becomes so much easier, happier. You're excited. You're enthusiastic
mm-hmm.
about what you're doing. Other people support you. They're not jealous. They're not, you know, undercutting you. And
yeah.
the same for them. Yeah, we support mm-hmm. each other. So you live in a sort of a different culture, different subculture.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you've noticed that too, Amy.
Well, yeah, it's like those who do not support me kind of fall away.
Yeah, exactly.
And those who do are very close to my heart. And it's, yeah, it's very, especially after my second near death, I think that really shook my world. And I was 27 at the time and did not know what was going on. But I've been psychic since a child, and, you know, all my gifts came out again because I had suppressed them. I had denied them. Like, I did not, like, we deny the ego. We sometimes
right.
deny our gifts and suppress them. And, like, no, they have to go away because they're not, people don't understand that.
Exactly, exactly. And they're not no longer really part of your world. And I think I mentioned that in the book, that that you have to kind of be patient for a little bit, because
mm-hmm.
in the interim, it may feel a little lonely, and it may feel like, you know, there's no one for you. But you will find the support, because the universe does come through with people and teachers. You know, there's an adage, and the adages are true because they've lasted through the years because they're true. And that is, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And that happened for me. I'm sure it happened for you. It happens for everybody. You know, as soon as you're ready for something new and you ask the question, that's the other thing. Questions are more important than answers. Ask the question.
Uh-huh.
And that's what started me off on this whole path. And when I was 9 years old, I said, you know, either I had a prayer because I was so frustrated and exasperated as a child. And I said, Holy Spirit, either tell me why I'm here and what's going on, or take me back. I don't understand this. I want to understand it. Well, be careful what you ask for, because I asked to understand it, and I had to go through quite a path to so that I could look back and write this book, so I could understand all the steps in the process. Not everybody has to do that. But that was what I was called to do. So, but asking the question, well, who can help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
How can I learn this?
Mm-hmm.
Just ask the question. Guess what? As soon as you start asking, and I know you and the people listening have seen this. You ask a question, and all of a sudden, here comes a magazine. You're sitting in a doctor's office, and there's an article about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It gives you mm-hmm. the answer. Or here comes somebody who starts talking to you about this thing that you're looking for information about.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody sends you a YouTube video on your cell phone, and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
So just ask the question, and the universe, literally, you send a vibration out that magnetizes the answer to you.
Mm.
And it does work every time.
It does. And you mentioned the importance of having a teacher in your life. How do you feel the teacher keeps, or the guide, we'll call it a guide, keeps us on track?
Well, here the way I see it is that the first mirrors we look into to see who we are our parents and the people around us when we're little, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those people didn't get training to do this either. So they brought down from wherever they came from, their parents, their culture, their religion, they brought all of those beliefs, and that gets imposed on us. From the minute they know you're a boy or a girl, you start getting expectations on you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are the mirrors we look into to see who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you are going into this new phase of your life where there is no mirror that can tell you who you are, you need a clean mirror. You need someone who's already been there, done that, that has been through the process, that has nothing to gain by imposing anything on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look in their eyes, and they just reflect back to you yourself, who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need a teacher. We need a teacher, a guide, maybe more than one,
mm-hmm.
that can just reflect back to us ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to do with my clients, because now that I've found my own, I certainly don't need to take anything from them, nor do I need to give them anything. I just need to be that person they can look at, and I can say to them, how does it feel to you? Where are you feeling that in your body? You know, just helping them to reconnect to the information that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And trust it. And begin to trust it.
Yeah, because, there's been teachers in my lifetime that have been able to reflect back to me what I need to learn or what I'm trying to accomplish or what I need to learn at this time. It's amazing. People do come into our lives. I tell my clients, too, people, places, and things will be brought to you you are ready.
That's right.
When you are ready. And that's
mm-hmm.
it, you know. Let's talk a little bit about EFT for a second.
Okay.
Exactly what is EFT for some people I like to go back to the bare bones with some of the questions because some people may have heard of this but don't
mm-hmm.
know exactly what it is.
Okay. Right. It's called the Emotional Freedom Technique because what it does, it's an acupressure technique. It's a tapping technique, and there are points that you tap on. And not to get into too much of the history of it, but what it does, it's a physical technique, so it's kinesthetic. Here's the thing about this transformation process we're talking about. Cognitive and behavioral strategies will work during the years that you are, that what we call the age of reason is 7, right? 6 or 7. Is your age of reason. That's when logic and reason comes into your life. Your mind is ready to do that. Well, those logical, rational strategies work up until that age, you know, working backwards to that age. But from
mm-hmm.
0 to 7 is not logical, not rational. It's all experiential.
Mm-hmm.
What we learned was all kinesthetic. And so the kinesthetic techniques like EFT, which is a tapping technique, there are others, the energy techniques, tend to work better on those illogical, irrational sensory data.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, it sort of disconnects. Now in the adulthood, you can see it for what it is. It begins mm-hmm. to disconnect the emotional energy from it.
Okay,
now you're no longer stuck at 3 or 4. It doesn't take away the memory, but it disconnects that emotional sensory fear that is related to it from that child's perspective. And so that's how it works. I have a YouTube video. It's called the EFT demonstration video. And so people are welcome to just go to YouTube and put my name in, and you'll see technique, how to do the technique for yourself. It works on the surface in the moment. If you just do the tapping, it brings down the cortisol level from the stress. And so they've done actual research to prove that. It brings the cortisol level down. Now, you can also use it on a deeper level, and that's what I do in my therapy, in my coaching and with therapists and so on. I teach it to therapists. There's a level, a second level of it where you can go deeper and really disconnect some of those core issues that have kept us stuck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful technique when you know how to, in the right hands, you know, like I said, on the surface, bring your stress level down immediately. I've got it in my stress book as an instant stress buster, because instantly it will bring your stress level down. But then you can also use it at a deeper level to disconnect some of these old patterns. Cravings is another one for weight management. I lost 100 pounds 3 times, and then I finally figured out a lot of reasons why that came back on. Losing is not hard. Gaining it back was the hard thing. And then I learned that the tapping works very well for cravings and disconnecting some of the old beliefs about the food.
Yes. Well,
old patterns of food.
Yeah, food can be fill a void for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, we don't call it comfort food for nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
It probably was your first comfort food. You know, Grandma made I tell you how many people tell me macaroni and cheese is their comfort food because Grandma made macaroni and cheese for them, you know.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. It really is. And finally, when we get through all these things, and we step into action, and how do we keep the momentum going once we get that action going?
Yes. So when you step into the action, what you notice then, here's what you want to do is observe. You want your observer to be strong, mm-hmm. and you observe how you feel. You observe the benefits that are happening, mm-hmm. The energy you're getting. So every time, because that's what will happen. As you step into what the soul is calling you to, you're going to end up being more energized. You're going to end up feeling good. And being happy, and you want to observe that and notice it, because that's what then engages your mind, mm-hmm. and your mind catalogs. So what you want to do is notice the feel of it, how it feels to you, right? Because it's sensory again, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, what you're feeling. So you're putting on a certain kind of music. So I know if I'm procrastinating, let's say, and I'm just kind of wanting to escape, I put on a certain music, and I know it's going to bring me back. It's going to bring me my energy back. It's going to connect me to myself again. And I know that that works because I've observed it, and it's happened every time. And so my mind goes, wait a minute, let's do something different. Let's get up. Let's walk outside, you know, go into nature, whatever it is. And so now exercise is a good one for me. When I go to exercise, I do it because I love the feeling I have after. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I got to exercise because I should, right?
Right,
no,
exactly.
It's because I have stepped into this in a new way, and I've learned that this is the kind of exercise I love to do, number one, and I feel good while I'm doing it. I'm noticing that, right? So then it attracts me to it. It's just like any other habit or any other craving. You know, you can embed a new pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, when you take those action steps, just being in that observer and observing, how do you feel? Oh, yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah, I know about the exercise. Zumba was one of them because I love Spanish music, and then walking.
Oh, yeah.
I love walking, and I love being by the water. So this is my favorite time of year. You know, walking by the waterfront, you know, and it does associate, you know, then you want to go down and you want to walk 3-4 times a week and, you know, add my fiance to it. It's great, you know.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to do, like you said, you know, embed new patterns. I wonder what our, you know, pathways in our brain, you know, I always think I'm making new pathways.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure there's a neurological, we could study it and find the neurology in it, and that would make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And knowing that will not change anything, you see.
Exactly. But
that's the problem. That's the problem with writing the book from a conceptual perspective. It will make total sense, and it won't help anybody to do it.
Right. And that's why I was so, I see at the end of the chapters exercises of writing it down, too. That's very important.
Right, because then you have, here again, it's an actual physical experience. You have to organize your thoughts in order to write.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And related to your own experience.
Sure.
You know, right. And that's, like you said, that's where people, you know, that's why you brought your experience in the book and some of your clients, because people can relate to that. Then they can make their, oh, I can do that too. You know, like with Michael, I love that. And I just love that. I just, you know, the creative visualization and him just mm-hmm. going for it and, you know, working through that. So I think that's a great process that kind of puts it all in the, you know, the process in the book to me, you know, speaks to
right.
me.
Right. It's the how to.
Exactly.
How to. Step by step, how do you do it? How does it feel? What does it look like? And I can then you can track your life and say, oh, yeah, I remember doing that, too, and I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it is the human experience. It's not just that was what I needed to know, too, is not just me. This is I've seen this in every client that I've had since I understood it. So then I can say, well, this is the human experience. This is how it works for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, we have to wrap up. Tell people where they can find you and, you know, your website. I do have it posted on the BBS Radio guest page. But tell us where we can find you and the book and everything.
Well, if you the basic website is Ayla, A-I-L-A, Speaks, speaks.com.
Wow.
AylaSpeaks.com. That's mostly what I do is presentations. And then all of the books and everything are on that website.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful.
And you can get the book, you know, all kinds of places. But if you go to thecallofthesoul.com,
mm-hmm.
it will take you right to the page where the book is available. You know, you can buy it on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. But there are also some very special gifts that are available that are free. With the when you purchase the book.
Oh yeah, the book was wonderful.
Because it
was,
just came out, so this is our launch time, and so there's some gifts that we're giving people, just to help them along the way.
Oh, Ayla, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on. It was wonderful.
It was delightful, Amy. I love talking with you.
Same here, sweetie. Well, everyone, next week we have Drea Bauer, who's going to be talking about online dating and how to be how to find your mate online.
Oh, I'll have to listen in on that one.
Yeah. Well, I found mine online, so I'm welcome to it. Well, thank you very much, Ayla. And next week, everyone, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.